This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Sean Tubbs. Global warming has become such a mainstream concern that it's attracting the attention of several local groups. The League of Women Voters in Charlottesville chose the topic for its February meeting with a discussion of what local governments can do to respond to the phenomenon. The two speakers you'll hear from in this podcast are former Charlottesville Mayor Maurice Cox and former Albemarle County Supervisor David Bowerman. Bowerman served on the County Planning Commission in the 1980s before joining the Board of Supervisors in 1989. He chaired the local Sustainability Council from 1994 to 1998. Bowerman began his remarks by noting the nice weather on the day of the event.
Everybody talks about the weather and nobody does anything about it. And I think up until just a few years ago, that was pretty much the case. But I don't think that's the case anymore. I think we are doing something about the weather, and what we're doing is not a good thing. 9 years ago, I stood before a group of 200 area citizens in the Market Street parking garage and gave a report on sustainability of our region. And you might wonder what we were doing in the parking garage. Well, we wanted to pick a spot that had something to do with sustainability, and what it had to do with sustainability was used to be a brownfield. There were torn down houses on it, and they created a parking lot out of it. And also, from that parking lot, you could look out and see Monticello and the surrounding area. So we had some new development that we were associated with, as well as the environment that we could see from the garage. And most importantly, we didn't want to rent a tent. And it was in the summer, and it did rain. And we were on the second floor, and we survived the deluge. But it was a good place to have it. And I had the honor of chairing that council, and it was the work of about 30 members of our community. It was the staff of the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission and hundreds of additional individuals who contributed and took over 4 years and lots of research to complete. And sustainability is simply about recognizing the long-term impact of our actions and about how every decision we make affects other people, our environment, and our economy in ways that may not be obvious unless we realize that everything is interconnected. The report talked about transportation and that we could use less fuel by carpooling, riding the bike, walking. We also talked about neighborhoods and how they can be linked together with roads, bikes, and pedestrian paths, that the community should have access to clean and abundant water, and that we should buy locally when possible. When I gave the report on sustainability to this community, I talked for about 20 minutes, and nowhere in our research, nowhere in the slideshow, nowhere in our report was there any discussion of global warming. And this was in 1998. We did not address global warming as a looming reality. The year that we finished, the following year, as it turns out, it really wasn't necessary for us to point it out because at that point, most of the world's representatives were in Kyoto, Japan, working on a plan to reduce the level of greenhouse gases to the level observed in 1990. The Kyoto Protocol is a treaty under which industrialized countries agree to reduce their collective emissions of greenhouse gases by a little over 5% a year compared to 1990, and to do so by the year 2010, which is probably not going to happen since it's only 3 years present. The goal is to lower overall emissions of 6 greenhouse gases: carbon dioxide, methane, nitrous oxide, sulfur hexafluoride, HFCs, and PFCs. National targets range from an 8% reduction for the European Union to 7% for the U.S., 6% for Japan, 0% for Russia, and no increase for China. And Australia and Iceland can actually increase their level of emissions because they're so low. But the United States, the single largest producer of carbon dioxide in the world, is not a signatory to this treaty. We all know that. We could spend some time discussing the reasons why the Bush administration and the Congress have not ratified the Kyoto protocols. Excuses are many, but they include there isn't enough science, puts too much of a burden on the United States, China doesn't have to reduce any pollution, it will put Americans out of work, it's not fair, global warming is a hoax, blah, blah, blah. If you get on the net and you look up global warming, there is a surprising amount of information that speaks to no global warming. It's surprising how much misinformation is out there about this subject. How many of us have seen the movie An Inconvenient Truth or read the book? Just about everybody. Global warming and global cooling, for that matter, are caused by three things. Our slightly imperfect orbit around the sun, the amount of energy released by the sun's core and the fluctuations in the radiation that comes from it, and lastly, the amount of greenhouse gases in our atmosphere. Those are the three causes. Why has it taken us so long to recognize that global warming is an indisputable fact? I remember when the ozone hole was discovered, and I didn't have a time for this. I think it was sometime in the early 1980s or late 1970s. It was discovered over Antarctica. And it didn't take much time for us to wake up to the fact that we had to stop using CFCs because they were destroying ozone in our upper atmosphere. Maybe it was more dramatic. Maybe it was because the time to act was so short. Maybe it was because the cause and effect were more obvious. Regardless, we woke up and banned CFCs worldwide. And I just saw a recent report that said that showed the hole was just about the same as it's been. It's still large, and they expect it to take, I think it was another 50 years before it would begin to go back to what is considered normal for the polar region where it was first identified as being much too big. Ralph Cicerone, the president of the National Academy of Sciences, may have had the reason that it's taken so long. He asked, does it take a crisis to get people to go along a new path, or can they respond to a series of rational, incremental gains in knowledge? And that's what we've got. We've got sea level that rises millimeters a year, not feet in a decade. And what we're seeing now is the possibility that we might have feet in a decade if certain things happen the way we're going. And it's taken a long time for these incremental changes to our atmosphere and to our world to have an effect on us and for us to recognize that it is truly a global problem. Global warming is the new ozone hole. It's just taken more time and science to figure it out. I'll save time and assume that we all believe that man, through his industrial processes during the last 200 years on this planet, is making it warmer. We can't wait any longer for our federal government to take significant action on this issue. So what can we do at the local government and individual level to make our contribution in reducing our carbon footprint? I'll tell you what I'm doing. It's probably what most of you are doing, but something that you can all do. If you just type carbon footprint into your web browser, you can go to a site on the internet that'll let you calculate your own personal carbon footprint. It's pretty easy to use, and it doesn't take long to do it. But like a lot of people here, I've changed every incandescent bulb in my house to a compact fluorescent. We carpool, my wife and I, whenever we go to work together, whenever we can. We keep the temperature of our house below 67 degrees. That's pretty cold to me. We added more insulation in our attic and replaced all our windows with a higher insulation rating. And like the rest of us, we keep lights off in rooms we're not in, and we just try to use common sense in our daily activities. Admiral County, on the other hand, is taking some pretty significant steps. It's developing a green building program. And in December 2006, the Planning Commission, of which we have a member here, adopted a resolution of intent to amend the zoning ordinance to promote green building and sustainability. They're having their first work session in March to begin that process, which is next month. At this point, you may be wondering, what is a green building? Well, there is a green building rating system, which is a nationally accepted benchmark for the design, construction, and operation of high-performance buildings. It promotes a whole building approach to sustainability by recognizing performance in five key areas of human and environmental health: sustainable site development, water savings, energy efficiency, especially for the lifetime use of that building, material selection, and indoor environmental quality. Currently, the green building rating system is being used in the planning and construction of the new Crozet Community Library and in renovations to Murray High School in the county. Another example of county initiatives is with the construction of the new county courthouse and in work with the development community. To this end, the county has three strategies. Participate in the Energy Star program. Energy Star is a joint program sponsored by the Department of Energy and the EPA, which is a program to reduce consumption of energy in all areas of our lives, and you can get Energy Star certified. It's a way to reduce the consumption of energy both while you're constructing a building and then throughout the life of the building itself. They also went to establish an advisory committee composed of builders and developers, environmentalists to support and achieve the objectives of the sustainability accords in the building industry. And the third area was to identify obstacles to green building and sustainability within the zoning ordinance as it exists, and also other county regulations, and work to remove them. In July of 2005, the county installed the largest green roof in the Commonwealth. You might not notice it. It's on top of the county office building down on McIntyre. This project works to reduce energy consumption. It's the largest green building, green roof in the Commonwealth. There are all strains of strange plants and algaes and things that I didn't identify. But they survive in an environment that's very hot and very dry on an area like the roof. And not only does this reduce the cooling load on the building during the summer, but it also, in a microclimate type of situation, reduces the temperature of the air just above the building, on the building roof, and reduces in a very small way the heat island effect that we get when we're in developed areas. Since 2005, the county has purchased 6 hybrid vehicles and intends to continue with this in the future. But follow me on this. A year ago, gas prices went up. And in order to get a hybrid vehicle, you had to pay an extra charge for it because they were in such short supply. Today, gas is about a buck cheaper. It's gone up a little bit, but it's about a buck cheaper. And hybrid vehicles are all over the lots of dealers. And they can't seem to give them away even with rebates. And this is all because gasoline prices changed $1 in the last year. Are we really that messed up that a dollar's price in gasoline means whether we try to save gas or we don't? What are we thinking? At the end of 2006, the county partnered with the City of Charlottesville and the university and the Charlottesville Design Center to bring a 2-month exhibit to the center entitled, What is Sustainability? The City, the County, UVA, and You. This was an effort that addressed sustainability in general. And you've heard me talk a lot about sustainability. Sustainability is about the entire environment, built environment, our living environment, everything. And if we truly have things sustainable, we won't have global warming in the future. Another thing the county did is they funded a project to replace all their incandescent bulbs with energy-efficient compact fluorescents. In both county office buildings, in the county courthouse facilities and the Monticello Fire Station. While the county doesn't have a formal policy to address global warming, my conversations with county officials indicate that Albemarle will, one, continue with the green building program and other initiatives to reduce the production of greenhouse gases, two, will continue to promote sustainability in all areas of county governance, and three, continue working with the City of Charlottesville, the University of Virginia, and other area agencies to help to make this a greener community. Excuse me. My closing comments come from the U.S. Catholic Bishop. They had a meeting on global climate change. And they said this, at its core, global climate change is not about economic theory or political platforms, nor about partisan advantage or interest group pressures. It is about the future of God's creation and the one human family. It is about protecting both the human environment and the natural environment. It is about our human stewardship of God's creation and our responsibilities to those who come after us. Thanks all very much.
That's David Bowerman, a former member of the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. Next, we'll hear from Maurice Cox. He served on the Charlottesville City Council for 8 years, ending his term in 2004 after a 2-year stint as mayor. He came to Charlottesville to teach architecture at the University of Virginia. He focuses on urban design issues in his teaching and is a frequent speaker across the nation, extolling the virtues of the city's downtown pedestrian mall.
Good afternoon, everyone, and it's actually great to be before a local audience. I haven't had the pleasure of speaking about the city of Charlottesville and in some years now, and certainly haven't had the pleasure of trying to talk about all the things I believe in under the banner of climate change. So this is a real test for me to see if I can talk about the things that I believe in and I believe Charlottesville conveys in terms, in strictly environmental terms. And I say that because my awareness of what I do in terms of sustainable principles probably came about with the arrival of Bill McDonough as the new dean of the School of Architecture back in 95. And it was clear that there was a perfect match between Thomas Jefferson's academical village, the things, the ideas that he espoused, and Bill McDonough. That's significant because it changed our mindset about how we looked at our built environment, even though we had kind of ingested all of these beliefs. He was able to give us, change our lens by which we view our work. I got elected in 96, and it was during the debate about reversion. The debate was about reversion, if you all remember that. But it was fundamentally a debate about the codependency of the city and the county and how we should be governed as one community to continue the quality of life of this place. That was 96. In 1998, there was an important moment that where the city commissioned a study that looked at the city and our park system. And then 2 years after that, in 2000, really someone who identified himself as an environmentalist, Kevin Lynch, was elected to city council. So I think that's the lead up to these concerns becoming more primary in our discussions. But the kind of change that we're talking about is a fairly radical change when we talk about global warming. And communities have a real hard time with these kind of adaptations. The wonderful thing about Charlottesville is that we had actually built up some capacity to do these kind of transformative changes over in our recent history. So you look at the East Main Street, which is our mall today, and you look at that and you see all of the symptoms of a community that is ailing and completely out of sync, perhaps, with its values. Congested Main Street, a failing commercial base. And it was through public policy, our city leaders taking an initiative to radically transform the Main Street by evicting cars and going to an alternative mode of transportation, foot traffic, pedestrians, and create, and in the process of working on this for 3 decades, created one of the premier urban environments in America. And so I think this speaks well to our capacity to radically transform our environment to be a little closer to our values. And often I think about this kind of work in the terms by a Kennedy professor, Ronald Heifetz, that talks about adaptive change and talks about true leadership in issues like this is more about your ability as a community leader to get your community to face the adaptive challenges of their time. And this, in effect, it is explained an adaptive challenge is where, in effect, the community values that sit on one side, there is a gap between that and the reality that you are living. So we all want to live in a very sustainable community. We all want to have less car dependency. The majority of us came in a single occupancy vehicle to this event. And there you have an example of a break between what you value and the reality that we're living. And I believe that part of the leadership challenge is to narrow that gap. And it has to be done incrementally, as David Bowerman has been suggesting, and it has to be done in a way that addresses your ordinary routine. And this is where I think local government can be so helpful. Next. Because there are tangible things that we can do, but in order to do them, we have to change the paradigm. And I found this to be a significant changing of the paradigm for me. In 1998, the city commissioned Greg Bleem to do a comprehensive study of our parks. Well, if you look at this incredible image taken from UVA looking to downtown, this notion that the city is a park, that effectively we are blessed with an abundance of nature, of trees, of streams, that we're not trying to, if we see the city as a whole, and we see it as the green infrastructure as a critical part of how we define the city, well then a lot of the policy changes that you think about making shift. You start to be concerned about steep slopes and where you build, about the health of your streams, about the forest canopy of your community. So 1998, we were not necessarily vocalizing the environmental agenda, but effectively the ability to capture it in a word or a phrase helped us to talk about it. Next. And then that, 8 years later or 6 years later, has infused the way we think about our parks. So these particular ideas for city parks now integrate a much larger context of stream health, tree canopy, and each park plan is an opportunity to teach all citizens, starting from our youngest, about the role of the park as a kind of green lung in our city. Next. And this has become common practice now in terms of how we engage citizens about the health and sustainability of the community. These are beautiful parks, but they can be talked about in the context of sustainability. It's every day. It's a place you use. Next. The next critical point that deals with this issue of the gap between our values and the reality for me was in the 2000 comprehensive plan process. And you begin these guiding principles was the product of 27 different neighborhoods having a discussion simultaneously about their community. And as you can see, the principles that people identify with is this notion of strong neighborhoods with identifiable centers, accessible by public transportation and alternative forms of transportation, and where housing is both diverse in terms of its scale, price, financing, and location. So these were the values that we collectively owned. What was interesting, again, is when we looked at our physical environment, it didn't match the values that we espoused consistently. Next. And so one of the things that the council did was to say, okay, well, let's look at the city as a whole. Let's look at it as holistically, and let's begin to evaluate and reevaluate how we're using our urban footprint. And this notion of taking a look at every street that led out into the county and whether it matched the reality that people were saying they valued was an exercise done by Torti Gallus. And the findings were really quite fascinating. Next. We asked them to look at available land on all of our commercial corridors and to imagine a build-out scenario that would mirror the guiding principles that citizens had spoke about in the comprehensive plan. A very radical change of what those streets might look like came about. Next. What we had to do after that was to go back and completely overhaul our zoning ordinance, because we had a zoning ordinance that promoted segregation of uses, that promoted dependency on cars, and promoted a very low density development. And so we rewrote the rules. We rewrote the rules of everyday development in Charlottesville. It took 3 years from that comprehensive plan discussion to the council unanimously supporting this mixed-use zoning ordinance. And now, 3 years later, we're seeing an incredible transformation of infill development in the city. Next. And I have a couple of examples of these kinds of projects where the city led by example. They put these parcels that were owned by the city that were brownfield sites so that they were cleaned up and used as model cases for how urban infill mixed development could happen. So you have apartments on the same lot as an office and retail. Next. You have another brownfield site that the city put together that brought in 42 condominiums in the North Belmont neighborhood. Next. And residual parcels, can you go back? Residual parcels, which are parking lots in our core, being looked at now as a place for best case, best practices within the urban core. So in this case, the parking is on a kind of mezzanine level, retail is on the ground floor, and residential living above. And this is inching up in terms of the density that we are accustomed to seeing in downtown. The number of cars per unit is one or less, as opposed to the norm of how many cars might be needed in a place like this. Next. And then the debate, which we have heard a lot of lately, is this push now to build to a higher density in the downtown core. So there are about six projects in the pipeline that are talking about residential development that is building out to 9 stories. And so we have a new challenge of how we protect the urban environment, but clearly this will be good for our ability to sustain a pedestrian and transit underpinning in our city if we can resolve these discrepancies. But also outside of our center, the greatest opportunity are in streets that were really engineered for cars and low retail development. And so areas like Cherry Avenue, next, we believe have the potential to be a place where an affordable housing range can actually be met, and those streets could be transformed to streets which actually support pedestrians, support bicycles, and support living in the sense of becoming discernible centers for those neighborhoods. Next. And another example is Preston Avenue, which was meant to be a divided highway. How you restructure the rules so that you can actually turn a place like that over time, over the long term, next, into a place that accommodates residential mixed-use development. So now our rules are consistent with our values, and over time we'll see the implementation of these projects and the transformation of these corridors, much like the downtown mall was transformed. Next. But there are things that are being done that are quiet things, having to do with promoting energy efficiency in all of the ranges of house income. As Byron said, we've gone in and we've changed our bulbs in our homes, but we're also building new affordable housing in Charlottesville with an ENERGY STAR rating. So all of the houses, those multicolor houses you see in the 10th and Page area, have met this new criteria of ENERGY STAR in terms of their efficiency. But not just the new housing, even the adaptive reuse of Garrett Square as Friendship Court, through the support of a nonprofit, they were able to come in and change all of the windows, insulate the units, and those units as well have an increased efficiency. I couldn't help but put in the county's fantastic example of leading in environmental agenda. It's in the city, which is a good place for county government to be, and it's the greenest building currently, as was mentioned. Charlottesville is also, this is good, Charlottesville is also being a leader in new building, where the Transit Center will be the first LEED certified municipal building in Charlottesville for new construction. Everything from its mechanical systems to its cooling and its message, transit having a facility, truly a facility that is ahead of the curve. And this leads us to the possibility of beginning to look at how we can have LEED certification for everything from commercial interiors to future municipal buildings, to retrofitting our existing buildings. I'm waiting for City Hall to put a green roof on our flat roof. Next. But I think the true leap is for Charlottesville is to embrace clean vehicles and clean transportation modes. And the one that I have become a strong advocate for is taking the first step to bringing back the historic streetcar system to link our downtown first to the University of Virginia to significant employment centers, and to extend it from the University of Virginia to Barracks Road, another place where people would like to go, and then taking it on out at the appropriate scale of transit, whether it's bus rapid transit, through the 29 corridor. Our first step is to demonstrate capacity to do it just between downtown and the University of Virginia. And currently there is a task force that was appointed by this mayor that's actually doing the work of what is it going to cost, what kind of impacts will it have in the development of our West Main Street corridor. Next. And this has the capacity to transform once again, Charlottesville, much like the downtown mall or East Main Street was transformed into the downtown mall. It's about creating the kinds of places that people want to stay, that people want to live, that people want to traverse. And wouldn't it only be fitting to start at the McIntyre Ridge, a place that used to be the nexus of this community at Vinegar Hill? I think that's the issue ultimately is how do you make this become commonplace amongst our citizens? How do you externalize this conversation and engage everyone in thinking of how they exist in the city from principles of green, so the greening of Charlottesville? And I fundamentally am an optimist, and I believe that we shape our world and that we can shape it to a much greener and healthier place. I have been very encouraged by the steps that have gone on since my time on council. Recently, I know that the mayor received the council's support in joining the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement, which is pretty rigorous, a set of 12 points that localities agree to implement. We have addressed our water protection ordinance, our steep slope, critical slope ordinances, our special use permits for infill development, and each of these steps, and they've been nonstop since 2000, has incrementally shifted the rules towards a more sustainable Charlottesville. And so without even noticing, the city is building in its green infrastructure and will make it easier for all of us to take the leap that we need to take to support and sustain the quality of life in Charlottesville and Albemarle. Thank you.